This week we will consider Proverbs chapter 3. This is a continuation of Solomon's introduction for his words of wisdom. As he will do throughout these opening chapters of Proverbs, Solomon exhorts his listeners to hear his wisdom and to keep it so as to receive the blessings of it. In today's passage, Solomon's discourse is somewhat freewheeling, and he touches on numerous topics: love and faithfulness, humility, wise stewardship of resources, and so forth. Most of these topics we will give a deeper consideration when we move into the later chapters. For today, then, for a topic which is a bit more introductory, we will be considering the nature of law and its relationship to wisdom, using Solomon's comments about violence and the neglect to fulfill a duty as a springboard. Your passage for consideration, then, is Proverbs chapter 3, and if you have not read it yet, I recommend that you pause and do so now. The opening 9 chapters of the book of Proverbs are to be distinguished from most of the book in that they do not contain any proverbs. Proverbs are short statements on wisdom, usually in couplets, that is, two lines, with those two lines generally either contrasting each other or complementing each other. The opening chapters of the book are different from those, though, in that they contain longer statements about wisdom. As we've studied for the last few weeks, and will continue in today's message, the opening 4 chapters contain something of an introduction to the topic of wisdom. The middle 3 chapters of the first 9 contain information about wisdom itself, with a particularly heavy emphasis on avoiding adultery. The last 2, chapters 8 and 9, round out the opening with some more conclusory remarks. So, in studying today's passage, we're still only dipping our toes into what it means to be wise. Today's passage will give us a few pointers on wisdom, but primarily it will focus on urging us to get wisdom, to hold on to wisdom, to apply wisdom, to accept discipline so that we don't leave the path of wisdom, and it will tell us the benefits of having wisdom. For the last 2 weeks, we have had similar introductory remarks. 2 weeks ago, we had, in chapter 1, a discussion about what wisdom is, and last week, in chapter 2, a discussion about how to get it. In today's chapters, the discussion becomes a little less focused. There's less clear theme and logical progression and more generalized talk. In the opening section, we have an exhortation that the son should not forget his father's teachings. Here, the exhortation includes an encouragement that the wise teachings of the father would give the son a long and peaceful life. Solomon urged that his listeners should hold on to love and faithfulness, metaphorically saying that they should write them on their hearts and bind them around their necks, and that by doing so they would receive the favor of both God and man. Solomon's teachings are teachings to hold on to. To attain this wisdom from God takes humility. We will devote some attention to this idea at a future date, since there are many proverbs which discuss humility, so we won't dig too deeply into the subject matter today. But this passage encourages the listener not to be wise in his own eyes and instead to listen to Jehovah. We all are sinners and we all are fallen. We have limited information and limited capacities for reasoning. We do not know better than God knows. God knows what is best for us, and so it takes a measure of humility from us to accept that. We must learn the self-control to put aside our own desires when they contradict the Scriptures and to obey the Scriptures. A person who lacks that humility, one who is wise in his own eyes, or one who lacks the self-control to put his own desires aside, will not be wise. However, the one who accepts this wisdom, Solomon tells us, will find healing. Part of having this humility to honor Jehovah means honoring him with one's wealth. Solomon gives the example of making sacrifices of the first fruits. We've discussed before how Israel had a complex system of sacrifices which were made at the temple. Obviously, sacrificing those things was expensive. When a person took the first fruits of his harvest or the finest of his livestock and burned it in sacrifice, there was a cost there. Now, thinking about the matter with purely human rationality, we would expect that destroying food in the sacrificial fire would naturally lead to having less food and less wealth. However, that is a matter of human pride, because what the human cannot see is the hand of God accepting the sacrifice and then working behind the scenes to give back abundantly more to the one making the sacrifice. Destroying wealth does not seem to be wise on the surface, but the man with humility, who would bow himself down to the Scriptures, he would be wise and he would be rewarded. His barns would be filled with plenty and his vats would be bursting with wine. And so Solomon exhorted his son not to despise Jehovah for his discipline. When a man does wrong, when he goes down the wrong and foolish path. If Jehovah loves that man and desires what is best for him, then he will discipline him. He will punish him to put him back on the right path. A proud person, when disciplined, will buck against that. He will presume his own righteousness and will reject God and his wisdom and his reproof. This is foolish. A wise man will accept correction, and he will recognize that correction is given for his best interest. In verses 13 through 18, Solomon recounted some of the blessings of wisdom. Wisdom, he says, is better than silver and gold and jewels. Indeed, if you give a fool these riches, he will probably lose them quickly through wasteful spending or bad investments or mishap. On the contrary, if you give a fool wisdom, he will probably find a way to gain silver and gold. So wisdom is the better thing to have. In fact, Solomon tells us wisdom will give a person not only riches but also long life and peace to go along with it. Solomon also compared wisdom to a tree of life, saying that those who hold on to her are blessed. Indeed, wisdom is a most desirous thing to have. Wisdom, in fact, is a thing which God has. Wisdom predates the creation of the world because wisdom is one of God's attributes. God has always existed in an unchanging state, and in that unchanging state, he has always had infinite wisdom. He used his wisdom to found the heavens and the earth. Surely knowledge so good as that is something which we all would like to have. In verses 21 through 26, Solomon again exhorts us not to lose sight of wisdom and encourages us to keep it because of its many benefits. He lists that wisdom is life. Indeed, having the right goals and going about them the right way will keep a person alive, and failing to do so might kill him. By wisdom, a man will walk without stumbling and will lie down to rest without fear. Solomon says here that even when ruin comes on the wicked, the wise man should not fear it, because the ruins will come on the wicked while Jehovah will protect the righteous. In verses 27 through 32, Solomon pivots to a handful of examples of wise advice. First, that we should not neglect our duties. Second, that we should not harm our neighbors without cause. And third, that we should avoid violence. First, he tells us, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it. The passage speaks to negligence to perform a duty, which is not wise. God has made man in his own image, and men have rights. With rights come duties. When one man has a right to something, it is the duty of another man to respond by giving it. For example, if a worker works, he has a right to his pay. Having a right to his pay means that his employer has a duty to pay him. And so when someone is due something, if it is within our power to give him his due, we should not withhold it. To withhold good from those to whom it is owed is foolish. It demeans the good, and it creates social strife. For this reason, Solomon expounds that we should not delay our neighbor from fulfilling his right. The negligent man who fails to perform his duty rightly earns the scorn of his neighbors and brings trouble on himself. Next, in verses 28 through 29, Solomon warns us not to plan evil against a neighbor or to contend with him when he has done no harm. Now, obviously, this would not prohibit contention when contention is due. If the neighbor is a lawbreaker who deprives you of your rights and fails to uphold his duties, then he gives a reason for contention. However, if a man does not do such as this, then you should not stir up trouble with him. Don't start a problem where no problem exists. Solomon's third nugget of wisdom, found in verses 31 through 32, is that we should avoid violence. The verses read, "Do not envy a man of violence, and do not choose any of his ways. For the devious person is an abomination to Jehovah, but the upright are in his confidence." We note that this is not a command to avoid all violence. Obviously, some violence is justifiable, like, for example, violence done in self-defense. It is, however, a command not to envy those who are characterized by unjust violence generally. The KJV renders the term oppressors. One might resort to violence reluctantly or for justifiable reasons without envying a man of oppression or choosing his ways. Those who make violence their default, though, and who engage in violent acts without justification to harm others, the muggers or those who initiate aggressive wars and so forth, those are an abomination to God. To the contrary, those who restrain violence to its proper place, the upright people, demonstrate that they have received God's counsel. And of course, we find in verses 33 through 35 that God blesses the good and curses the evil. God gives his scorn to those who scorn him, and he favors those who humbly accept him. He gives honor to the wise, and he gives disgrace to the fools. In our application today, let us talk about the relationship between righteousness and wisdom. Often the Proverbs will talk about both of these. We have defined wisdom as having the best goal and going about it in the best way. A wise man might want to build a house. That is a good goal. And that wise man might also know how to build a house. If he goes about it in that way, then he will wisely accomplish his goal. A foolish man might have that same goal but not know how to go about it. He will fail in his goal. A fool might also have a bad goal. Rather than doing something beneficial like building a house, he might make it his goal to build a pointless staircase that goes to nowhere. That would be a foolish waste. Having defined wisdom, we might next define righteousness so that we can compare and contrast them. A person is righteous when he does that which is morally correct. The laws of God, not at all in this conversation to be confused for the legal codes of men, define for us what is morally right and what is morally wrong. So a righteous person is the one who obeys the law. The righteous person works while the unrighteous person steals. The righteous person abstains from fornication while the unrighteous person commits fornication, and so forth. And so here we see a distinction between righteousness and wisdom. Everything that is foolish is not necessarily unrighteous. To use our previous examples, it is foolish to waste resources, but that is not necessarily a moral evil. In like manner, to build a house given correct circumstances might be a wise goal, but building a house is somewhat apart from the moral law. It is not any moral duty to go out and build a house. And so there is a distinction between righteousness and wisdom. Righteousness and wisdom do overlap, however, because obedience to the laws of God is itself a good goal and the best way of going about things, while disobedience to the law is a bad goal and a bad way of going about things. The Proverbs exhort us to be righteous on many occasions. See, for example, Proverbs 10:6, which says in its first line, "Blessings are on the head of the righteous." So it is wise to take a wife. See, for example, Proverbs 18:22, "He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord." And it is wise for a man to constrain his sexual interactions to the confines of his marriage, not having sex with another man's wife. See Proverbs 6:32, "He who commits adultery lacks sense. He who does it destroys himself." But this wisdom also overlaps with the moral law. The Ten Commandments tell us you shall not commit adultery at Exodus 20:14, and provides a penalty of death for that sin at Deuteronomy 22:22, which says, "If a man is found lying with the wife of another man, both of them shall die, the man who lay with the woman and the woman, so you shall purge the evil from Israel." So righteousness and wisdom are not the same. Not everything that is wise is a matter of righteousness, and it is possible for a righteous man to also behave foolishly. However, everything that is righteous is wise, and a wise man must first be righteous. And so as we pursue wisdom, we must first pursue morality. It is no mistake that the law of Moses was delivered to us before Solomon's Book of Wisdom. Fear of Jehovah is the first step to wisdom, and that step entails accepting his moral laws. The moral laws are the foundation on which the house of wisdom must be built, and those who reject moral law will never be wise. In interpreting wisdom, we must be careful to give moral law priority. We recall from our previous discussions that wisdom is given in generalities. For example, in general, life will go well for the wise and badly for the foolish. But the Proverbs are not given as absolutes. It will not always go well for the wise and badly for the foolish. The apostles all died for their faith. That didn't go very well. The law, in contrast to these generalities, is an absolute. You shall not commit adultery is a law clearly defined, with punishments prescribed, and with no real room for interpretation or alternate opinions. Contrast that against a saying like Proverbs 27:7, "One who is full loathes honey, but to one who is hungry everything bitter is sweet." Well, that may be a wise saying, but it is more a statement about life and the general outcomes of life. It is a relative circumstance with no prescription for action or for consequence on failure to perform. It is valuable, but it is not a moral absolute. So the Proverbs, while certainly good, must be taken with a little grain of salt. They must be considered relative to the circumstances and with a priority given to the law. To demonstrate this priority, let us give an example of a priority misapplied. The Proverbs often teach the wisdom of pleasant speech. For example, Proverbs 12:18 says, "There is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing." It is generally unwise, then, to use harsh, rash words. However, we would never prioritize that above proper enforcement of the law. For example, if someone breaks into your house in the middle of the night to rob you, in violation of Exodus 22:2, a crime which carries a penalty of death, no one would fault you for speaking rashly and harshly to the homebreaker. No one would say, "Well, you said a rude word to him, so this balances out. The burglar is justified now in his actions, and so he is free to go." A rude word does not justify burglary. In a context like that, the proper application would be to punish the burglar for breaking in and to ignore the rude word entirely, because a rude word is of a vastly lower priority than is a violation of the law. Unfortunately, this principle is lost completely on most churches today. Often modern pseudo-churches are bent toward cultural relevance and social agreeableness, while at the same time harboring a strong distaste for morality. In many churches today, a man could live in very serious sin, directly violating the laws of God, and could be accepted in those pseudo-churches just so long as he is polite about it. Meanwhile, a person who impolitely exhorts him to repentance could find himself thrown out on his ear as one who is overly contentious. This sort of application displays a deep lack of understanding of the Scriptures. And so we come to the example given in today's passage. Solomon affirmed that wisdom requires us to uphold the law by describing that it is wisdom to fulfill one's legal duties, both by giving to the one to whom good is due and also by performing sacrifices, which, while they are not a duty for modern Christians, were a legal duty for the original ancient Israelite audience. But his comments on violence we must take in the existing context of moral law. The moral law teaches clearly that violence is justifiable in certain circumstances. As we have cited already in this message, crimes like adultery or breaking and entering can justify using violent force to kill a lawbreaker. It would be wrong, then, to apply Solomon's proverb here as an exhortation to total pacifism. It isn't. To rigidly apply this or other proverbs as a top priority would lead us to absurd outcomes and abrupt violations of the moral law. So as we study the Proverbs, let us remember the distinction and the overlap between wisdom and righteousness, and let us remember to apply words of wisdom within their proper context and priority. To conclude, in Proverbs chapter 3, Solomon continued his introductory discourse to his words of wisdom. In this chapter, he covered a range of topics, including the importance of keeping wisdom and its blessings, having the humility to honor God both in one's actions and with one's resources, and so forth. One theme the chapter highlights is the necessity of performing our duties toward our neighbor, which led us to a consideration of the relationship of wisdom to law. In considering this, we found that righteousness is a subset of wisdom. It is wise to be righteous, and one must be righteous to be wise, but not all wisdom is a matter of righteousness. We also considered that the wisdom given in the Proverbs is not to be taken as a moral absolute, but as a generality relative to circumstances, which will be important in our interpretation and application of the book. For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.